We hope you enjoy this episode of the Modern Divorce Podcast. But first, an important message for our listeners.
Embarking on a new chapter? Zach Knutzman of the Darwin Wall team at Realty One Group is your go-to real estate expert in Arizona, specializing in guiding couples and families through their real estate needs while experiencing a divorce. Modern Law's trusted partner, Zach, brings expertise, confidence, and compassion to your real estate journey. Let him help you navigate this challenging time. Zach Knutzman, your modern solution in real estate. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Modern Divorce Podcast. I'm your host, Billy Tarasio, today joined by high conflict parenting strategist, legal abuse expert, Lisa Johnson. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you are here and you have, really, we could be talking about a lot of different things, but today we're going to focus on legal abuse or post-separation abuse. First, how did you come to work in this very niche area?
Well, I was in my prior relationship with my ex-husband for 20 years, married for basically 18, never thought I'd get divorced. And then the time came and I thought it would be fairly amicable. The divorce ended up costing $100,000 and taking a year. And I knew we weren't done. My lovely divorce attorney said, he is not going to comply with this agreement and that you are going to be back in court, but you are going to be financially decimated. You're going to continue to be financially decimated if you use me. So you're going to have to learn to do what you can on your own. And then I thought, all right, well, that shouldn't take very long. And 9 years together and dozens of court appearances, I realized that there's actually a word for what I was experiencing, and that is legal abuse. And so all that, I say my education in the trenches of going through family court and then appellate court while representing myself against a very difficult ex taught me a lot. And so my partner, Chris, and I, who's the male half of Been There, Got Out, decided we should really do something with this knowledge, because if we knew then what we know now, we could have saved, I don't know how much money, time, and energy. And now we, you know, with the success, we're able to share that with our community.
What is Been There, Get Out?
Been There, Got Out. So we are two high conflict divorce coaches and strategists, and we help anyone dealing with getting away from a toxic relationship, separation, divorce, custody battle, and co-parenting hell have the chance of the best outcome in family court and beyond. We have a weekly legal abuse support group, and then we do one-on-one, which is kind of two-on-one coaching with our clients. And we have a book that came out last year called Been There, Got Out, Toxic Relationships, High Conflict Divorce, and How to Stay Sane Under Insane Circumstances. Mm-hmm. And we're working on another book now. We're just always figuring out ways to get it out to this community that they are not the only ones dealing with chaos.
Yeah. Okay. So if somebody is wondering, am I experiencing legal abuse? How would you define that for them?
Okay. So legal abuse is basically when one person is weaponizing a legal system to, what I say, like, wear the other side down and to bleed them dry financially. And we know that, especially after COVID, like being on the court's calendar, things are dragged out. So this can take a long time. There's two types that we see. One is what's called vexatious or frivolous litigation. And that's when the other side is constantly filing motions against you. So you have to respond. You have to spend thousands, if not more, in legal fees to go in and deal with these allegations. There's a sense of dread all the time. Like, if I'm not perfect, I'm going to get in trouble. They're going to take my kids away. I'm going to have no money. The other side of it is what I've experienced. And that's where someone is not complying with court orders. So like I said, my ex wasn't going to comply with my divorce agreement. My lawyer was right. And so the burden was then on me to go to court to try to enforce those orders. And at the time that this was happening, we were in one state. I transferred part of the case to another just for enforcement. And then COVID hit. And of course, new judges, new attorneys, COVID, everything. There were so many delays and confusion. And I think my ex hiring not just family lawyers, but criminal defense attorneys to muck things up even further just cost me so much time, energy. And luckily, I saved, I'm sure, well over $1 million by doing it myself. But it was about 6 or 7 years of my life.
Wow. 6 or 7 years of your life trying to gain compliance.
Yes.
Wow. And what were you trying to get him to do?
So ours wasn't even a custody issue because I had this wonderful divorce attorney, like I said, and at the very beginning of the process, he said, keep me in the background. My ex didn't have an attorney. He was doing the let's do the no attorney thing. So I hired a lawyer as a consult and he said, he prepared me properly for mediation and said, get what you can get done in mediation because you're going to save loads of money. So it was disarming for my ex to see that I didn't have legal representation. So I went in, played dumb, got an excellent parenting plan, but he wouldn't show up with the financials. So of course, we went on and on trying to get information. He didn't comply with discovery. I'm sure you're very familiar, Billy, people not complying with discovery. And it got exhausting. And after a while, Connecticut, my state, you have a year. They set trial from a year after papers are filed because they want that deadline in place. Mm-hmm. And so, we were just burning through money with fruitless negotiations that kept changing, the moving goalposts. And literally 2 weeks before trial, my ex finally settled, but we still hadn't taken care of college because he wouldn't agree to that. And so I knew I would have to go back. And so when I went back, we had like volunteer attorneys programs. And I talked to someone for 20 minutes and quickly gave her a summary of what I wanted to do to get what's called an educational support order for college. And she said, you actually have a fraud case. So don't go in as fraud, go in as a modification. And so luckily, this wonderful divorce attorney had written very clear protective language in our agreement. And so I was able to use that language to get, to succeed with both modifications in arrearages and alimony and child support and get a very good educational support order. But like I said, it took years to get the court to actually enforce it.
The order that you got. For him to pay for college.
Yes. So in our agreement, we had both, not everybody does this, and this is something we advise our clients to do, is make sure you have something in there because not all states require that both parents pay for college.
Right.
In Connecticut, in our agreement, we put a clause in there that said, had we had stayed together, we both would have contributed. Mm-hmm. But at the time of the divorce, we didn't have those percentages yet. Mm-hmm. So in my state of Connecticut, there's something called the UConn cap, which mm-hmm. is basically like, whatever the thing, whatever the division is, the maximum can be the state college's tuition.
Sure.
And then unless there's something else in there about, you agree that if it's private, then you'll mm-hmm. pay, but whatever. So it's a cap. So I had to go back to figure out what percentage he would pay and what percentage I would pay. And they generally do it 50-50, but I was able to successfully argue and he was then ordered to pay 80 and I was 20.
Got it. Wow. Okay. Hey there, co-parents. It's Billy Tarasio with Modern Law. And let me tell you about Our Family Wizard, our preferred co-parenting app. It's a game changer. I use it myself. With features like documented calls, secured messaging, shared calendars, and more, Our Family Wizard makes co-parenting smoother than ever. Trust me, I've seen the difference that it can make. Join the over 1 million parents and family law professionals who trust Our Family Wizard to make co-parenting easier. Ready to take some stress out of co-parenting? Head to ourfamilywizard.com/modern law. That is interesting. In the state where I'm in, there is no order for support that goes beyond 18. You can agree and then it becomes a contract, but you have to write it in such a way that it becomes an enforceable contract between the two of you because the family court loses jurisdiction over the enforcement once the children are no longer 18. So it's what you're talking about. This area is super, super tricky, very, very state specific. And because we're talking about college, there's a lot of money on the line.
Oh, yeah, especially now. And look at how fast tuition and other costs are increasing.
Right. Absolutely. So most of your litigation was around trying to get him to give you fair information so that you could get a fair outcome of financial split.
Well, that was part of it. So I had to go for the educational support order, like to establish that. But then because of the alimony, so the alimony and child support was based on income that he was representing on a financial affidavit that he was not representing correctly. He had 14 rental incomes with his sister and he kept putting zero. So we knew obviously there was income, but we couldn't, it was just getting so exhausting to keep chasing after it that we put a clause in there that said, this order, this agreement is based on the figures that the defendant has supplied to the court. If it's ever determined that there has been additional income that has not been reported, then this will, you know, will trigger a modification that will be retroactive to the date of dissolution. And so I was able to show that there always was this amount of income, even though tooth and nail fighting him, trying to get that. But he could, because he wouldn't supply any information. And what he did was like piles of mess and duplicate stuff that we didn't want. But I was able to put together something that made sense enough for a judge to say, yes, I think that her, what she's put together is more credible than the little bit of information he's provided. So we're going to go with what Lisa has, and that's how we're going to determine it. So then he had the educational support order and he had arrearages in alimony and child support, because at that time we had divorced. The divorce was final in 2016. I got that order at the end of 2018, but I did not get paid until October 2022.
Wow. What a journey.
Yeah.
What a journey. And you said that you also represented yourself in an appeal. What was that about?
Right. So, you know, people like my ex do not like it when they don't win or prevail in court. And so he didn't agree with the educational support order. He didn't agree with the arrearages. He didn't agree with the child support. He didn't agree with anything where he had to pay and didn't win. And so he kept filing appeals and he had an attorney. I was terrified because I was told, you know, family court is a circus, but appellate court is very serious. And, you know, I should really hire an attorney and it's going to be $15,000 just for that. And I was like, I just can't. But anyway, so he did make four appeals. In our state, because of the overwhelm with the courts, they had us meet with a retired appellate court judge who heard us together. You know, it's almost like a conference, like, who, you know, is this worth appealing? Does someone have a case? So his lawyer explained her case. I explained mine. Then the judge met with us individually and he said, you know, you really should get a lawyer, blah, blah, blah. And I explained that I said, I'm not flying solo. I'm certainly consulting with a lot of people in the background. And we had started, been there, got out at that point. So we have a lot of lawyer friends. And my dad happens to be, my dad and uncle are identical twins and they're patent attorneys. So they don't know family law, but they speak legalese. So my dad has really helped with putting together a lot of the paperwork through all these years. And I couldn't have done it without him. So then my ex and his attorney went in. And then afterward, the judge called us back and he said, look, basically, Lisa, the plaintiff has an overwhelming case. You're going to lose if you appeal. They did it anyway. And it was, I represented myself and we each had about 20 minutes. His lawyer lied in front of the panel of the judges and said that my ex had already paid the orders, which he hadn't. And I was astonished. I corrected it that she got rebuked by the panel. And they said she had to file some kind of affidavit to correct what she had said. I think she was disorganized in general. And that was in January of 2021. And in March, I think some court person called me and said, I want to let you know the outcome of the case. You prevailed. And by the way, this is being published in the Connecticut Law Journal. And I was like, well, what does that mean? They said, this is like a really big deal. It means that your case is notable. And the fact that you're pro se, like I have never heard of something like that. So you should be really, really proud of yourself. And so, you know, now that it's legal precedent for the state, I am really proud of it. And these are the triumphs that we get along the way. I mean, you know, everybody wants validation and the judge to punish the other person. And, you know, there's been bits of that, but having something like this happen and not being an attorney, mm-hmm. being like a high school English teacher, mm-hmm. but being able to use those skills really, really paid off. It was kind of like the cherry on top after prevailing, being told the whole time that I didn't understand, I didn't know what I was doing, I'm not a lawyer. But still prevailing and getting to that level, I just feel really good.
I love that. There are not enough resources for people who are representing themselves. It's something that I'm personally very, very passionate about because it's such a complicated system. It's very difficult to navigate by yourself. How do you help people in your support group navigate the legal system?
Okay. Yeah. So in our support group, as well as especially with our coaching clients. So my background is as a high school English teacher and I'm a professional writer. The book I flashed before is my second book, but I've been writing, you know, since I was a child. And one of my favorite things to teach as a high school teacher was persuasive writing. And so now that has carried over into the art of persuasive speaking. And so we work, you know, because we're not attorneys, we can't ever give legal advice, but we do teach the art of persuasion in written and spoken communication. And so often I'll talk about the hamburger essay, like the 5-paragraph essay and how, you know, let's say we're talking about custody and there's a bunch of different factors. You don't want to cover all of them. You do need to use them in your argument, but look at the ones where you have the most information, the most relevant things, what's the most egregious, what's the most recent thing that's happened, but putting together really powerful arguments, figuring out ways to capture the judge's attention, how to properly behave in court. We often talk about something called logos, pathos, and ethos in terms of persuasion. I say like logos, that's your logic, that's your truth and evidence, but that's only 1/3 of the case. And often on social media, you hear people, oh, my facts were perfect and I lost the case and the judge is biased. But that's only part of the case. Then there's pathos, which is the emotion around with which those facts are presented. And so being from New York, we're in New York City, and there's always lots of people like literally standing on soapboxes screaming. So it's the same kind of thing. If you go into court and you're ranting and raving, no one's paying attention. So you have to know, you have to be as calm as possible. And the way we help our clients be calm, as I say, not by saying calm down because that's inflammatory, but helping them be really focused and organized, like showing them these are the things that matter and these are the things that don't matter. Because often in a custody case, there's domestic violence with our clients. They want to blend the two about how bad I was treated and I want to make that part of it. They need to separate the issues. And if they have an attorney, and a lot of our clients do, we help them use their attorney more efficiently by mm-hmm. saying like, here's what matters. Only give them this stuff. Mm-hmm. Or let's work on summarizing things. Like mm-hmm. they'll say, well, what about this? Like they put him to bed really late and I don't agree. And like that doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Let's move on to another thing. But what about the clothes not coming? Nope. What they feed them at night, McDonald's, like does not matter. Let's stay focused on the general best interest factors. So again, logos, facts and information, pathos, emotions around with those are presented, but then the ethos or the decorum of the court. And I often compare it to like the Wizard of Oz. The judge is the wizard and you are Dorothy. And if you come in there with guns blazing, or like we often say, if you present as Mama Bear, you're going to get bitten by the system. So understanding the power levels and how to behave yourself. And to understand your role in that system, knowing what the values are of that court, trying to match those values, understanding the judge's position, understanding what the limitations are, you know, the courts deal, family courts, in our experience, it's like money and time. And to go in and expect punishment and validation and lightning bolts to come out of the side, like that is just not going to happen. That's not the purpose of it. And if more than anything, we want our clients to stay out of court. Right. We want to teach them that they have the most power themselves in mediation, if possible, or we do a lot with teaching strategic negotiation, like how to use leverage against somebody who's a very difficult personality. Logic does not apply, but there are ways to influence that person. So understanding a lot of those things, that's how we tend to help our clients. And there's more, but that's the gist of it.
Well, that was a lot. So. Right. What I heard, you know, tells me that you understand the court system and you're teaching the court system and the court culture, which is such an important thing for people to understand. Then the last thing you said is also really interesting to me. Using leverage with somebody who's, how did you describe them? High conflict,
difficult, abusive. So I mean, we don't want to just throw out the word narcissist all the time because it's not just that. It's just somebody who's not logical.
Right.
Somebody, you know, a high conflict personality. And we talk about that in our book. But often people who have some kind of personality disorder or addiction, which is what a lot of our clients' exes are, they are not thinking clearly. They are not thinking in their own best judgment. You know, like in their own, their own best interest. They're not using, they're incapable. So how do you deal with somebody like that when you have to make these significant decisions? And many lawyers, you know, you guys are trained in logic, but logic doesn't work because people like that are not trying to do what's fair and they don't care about the kid's best interest. So to keep approaching it, it becomes really frustrating. And we say our club is all of our clients, including me. Our lawyers are the ones who say, this is the hardest case I've ever had because it doesn't fit the mold of like, doesn't everybody care about doing what's best and what's right? No, they don't. They care about what's best for them. So that's why the approach has to be very, very different.
So what are some ways that you can approach someone who's illogical and unreasonable and acts against their best interest?
Okay, so one thing is, you know, people with a certain personality type are very self-centered and everything's about them. So instead of negotiating and saying, you know, this is what I think we should do for our children. First of all, when you say this is what I think or anything I want, that's already the signal that they will not do it or do the opposite. So you cannot express an opinion because someone like that feels like you're controlling them. Why do you think you're smarter than me? Why do you think you're the parents that's the authority? So there have to be ways where you make it feel like they're winning or they're leading the process. Like, what do you think? And we, many of our clients, and it's so predictable, many of our clients are accused of parental alienation when the other side doesn't get their way because they're not accountable for their own behavior. And when the relationships disintegrate with their children, of course, they want to blame someone. So part of what we teach is something called the alienation factors, like knowing this is what they're going to accuse you of. Make sure you don't do it, but start documenting and paying attention to the things that really means. So knowing that when there's children involved, that's a big part of it, you know, that they're going to try to turn the kids against the other parent, but then accuse you of doing it. So watching for that, but also in terms of negotiating, everything is always about them. So mm-hmm. If you can continue to negotiate from a perspective of like, how can I make that person feel like it's in their best interest to do something and use language and keep my mouth shut? And you think about like that yin and yang, like when they're pushing, you don't push back really hard. You want to keep them at the table and keep them out of court. You kind of bend a little, you, or at least you act like you're bending. We never want people to just give in because it just doesn't stop.
Right.
But there's ways to present yourself where you're giving them the mic and you're listening and you care about their opinions because you know they need an audience. Mm-hmm. So if you can just be quiet sometimes, that can be disarming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So stuff like that.
Lisa, this has been a fantastic podcast episode. We could just keep going on and on. Where can people find you? Where can they get more information and where can they work with you?
Okay, super easy. If you just search Been There, Got Out, our website is beentheregotout.com. Really easy. If they want to email, it's lisa@beentheregotout.com or Chris, my partner, chris@beentheregotout.com. Instagram's our home base. If you just do @beentheregotout with little underscores, you can find us. We're on TikTok, but not as much. We're on X, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, LinkedIn. We have a podcast called Been There, Got Out. We have a YouTube channel called Been There, Got Out. I respond to everything. That's actually me. Like we're still, you know, we still have a little bit of time that we're doing that. And now, like I said, we're developing this course. Oh, plus, you know, the book, not the current book yet because we're still writing it, but this is available on Amazon. Just search Been There, Got Out, the book, the podcast, whatever. You can easily find us.
Awesome. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on the show. And if you all have enjoyed this episode, make sure to like it, download it, forward it to your friends, and share the wisdom, share the love. It's been a really good one. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening to the Modern Divorce Podcast. Remember, anything you've heard today or anything you read online is not the replacement for actual consultation with an attorney and does not create an attorney-client relationship. Even if you called in and we spoke to you, you are anonymous and we don't have your details and you have not become a client of Modern Law. However, we would love to speak with you, or you should seek out the advice of legal counsel or counseling or any other expert near you. And if you have an idea for a show topic or you need to speak with an attorney in Arizona, you can reach me at info@mymodernlaw.com.